Kent.com, the quick and simple way to advertise your job vacancies in Kent, with prices from just £99 per job per month. Visit Kent's largest job site, jobsinkent.com.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker show here on channelradio.co.uk in association with bizradio.co.uk. I'm Niall, joined on the phone by Dan Watkins. Dan is the chair of the Climate Change Committee in Canterbury. Good afternoon, Dan.
Hello, Paul.
How are you?
I'm very good, yes, and hope you and your listeners are well also.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to have you join us. Thank you so much for taking the time to do that. I asked you to come on the programme following a tweet that I saw you put out the other day, which really fascinated me. And it's a subject that I don't know much about, but I'm fascinated by, and that is hydrogen power. And you were tweeting about something that's happening in the Canterbury district coming up soon, which is hydrogen buses.
That's right. In fact, the first step is building a hydrogen plant to manufacture hydrogen for buses.
Okay.
And that was what was approved at our planning committee last week. And I was tweeting about it, in my climate change role, but actually also I'm the councillor for that ward in Herne Bay, right, where that plant is going to be built.
Okay. I don't know what your technical background is. I don't know if you can probably explain this because you probably read the papers. But can you give us an overview of how hydrogen is manufactured?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is quite a new thing for Britain, although it's a bit more common globally. So, you can make hydrogen let's call it a dirty way, which is a sort of byproduct of heavy industry and using fossil fuels, right? But the interest, from my point of view anyway, is you can also manufacture it in an entirely green way, and that is using renewable electricity to produce hydrogen, and that's called green hydrogen. And this big plant, it's a big plant that's just been approved to be built in Herne Bay, is a green hydrogen plant and the first plant of any such scale in Britain. So this is the beginning of our hydrogen manufacturing industry.
Right.
And the way it's going to work is we've got a big wind farm, the Kentish Flats off the coast of Herne Bay. That produces a lot of renewable electricity that comes in through a cable into Herne Bay. And this manufacturing plant will be based near the substation there, physically connected. It takes that renewable electricity and it puts it through water, and that electrolysis of water produces hydrogen and oxygen.
Right.
And the hydrogen is captured and then stored, a little bit stored on site, but in fact they've got a fleet of tankers which will then distribute it to the end users. And there it can be burnt. And of course when hydrogen is burnt, however you use it, when it's burnt, all it produces is water vapor and energy. So the energy is used instead of diesel or natural gas, depending what your use is. But it doesn't have any carbon dioxide or any pollution. It's a clean fuel. So that's what's so exciting about this, is it takes wind and it makes a fuel. And this plant, its first customer is Transport for London,
right,
which has got about 20 hydrogen buses, I think, starting next year. Hydrogen from the plant in Herne Bay is going to be tankered up to London and fueling those buses. And it comes out just like a petrol station out of a pump, and you can fill a bus up very quickly with the hydrogen, and it will be customers will be powered along in those buses. And of course that replaces diesel, which is a very dirty fuel, produces lots of carbon and creates local air pollution issues.
Yeah, absolutely. Lots of particulates in diesel. What fascinates me about this, and I'm not in any way, shape or form having much expertise in it, I'm just an innocent bystander watching, but what intrigues me about it, and I know that a lot of vehicle manufacturers are experimenting and have done for a long, long time with hydrogen, the difference for me between a hydrogen-powered vehicle and the electric vehicles that we have now is that you can basically use the infrastructure we already have for refueling. Yeah, so petrol stations could refuel hydrogen. Yeah?
yeah, you, I mean, you'd have to have a different tank.
But yeah, of course.
But the way that you fill up, it feels just like a petrol station experience. As you
yeah,
say,
absolutely.
Yes. Totally different, isn't it? Electric battery, you've got to sit there and wait for some time.
Exactly. So you don't have to sit and wait for an hour to have 15 minutes worth of charge in a car. You can fill up in the same way that you would with a petrol or diesel car. Absolutely. So on the one hand, we've granted planning permission now for this manufacturing plant. Have you any idea, Dan, when it will come on stream? I know that's going from the sublime to the ridiculous, but do you have timescales for it?
Yeah, we did actually. Before COVID, the plan was for it to open in the summer of 2021.
Right.
Now, the planning application was a little bit delayed because our council, like all other councils, had to set up new ways of working. We had to, it was a virtual planning committee, one of the first ones we've held. So anyway, I imagine that maybe a couple of months have been lost. So I would say late 2021, this will be up and running.
Okay, good. So, on the one hand, we've got this new manufacturing plant going in, which is obviously going to create some jobs as well, both in building the plant and in operating the plant, which is fantastic because, as you're probably aware, what we're going to need more than anything when we're allowed out from the end of this this horrendous lockdown is we're going to need a lot more new jobs because there's going to be a lot of people looking for work. So it's great that we're doing something like that. I now want to talk about the buses themselves. Is the plan to put hydrogen-powered buses onto the streets of East Kent?
Yeah, so we would love to, right? The councillors at Canterbury City Council would love to have hydrogen-powered buses. They're so much cleaner, you know, and air pollution is a killer, right? Respiratory diseases. You know, tens of thousands of people die every year across Britain from pollution. So we want to have these clean buses on our streets. In order for that to happen, we need local bus companies such as Stagecoach to adopt this technology. And that's a kind of critical factor. There's also sort of, as well as the kind of privately run bus routes, we have a park and ride in Canterbury, which at the moment is delivered by a Stagecoach, but we can specify potentially what fuel that those buses run on. So some areas it's just trying to nudge Stagecoach and the other bus companies in the right direction, and if the park and ride schemes, councils directly control them and can ask them to do it. But hydrogen is still a little more expensive to run a bus. On the hydrogen than diesel or even electric. So there's a little bit of work to do on that, and how much are people prepared to pay to get these much cleaner buses, which undoubtedly will be the future, onto our streets.
Yeah, interestingly, slightly the same subject, but Bob Beattie, one of our listeners, has just tweeted me a link to the Toyota website, and Toyota in the United States, by the looks of it, have a hydrogen-powered car that's available to buy now called a Toyota Mireya. And looking at it, it's actually quite reasonable. It's $329 a month to lease, so it's not hellishly expensive either. You quite eloquently explained where we are with buses. I need to ask you this, and I'm fully in favour of this. I think it's a brilliant idea, and I think renewables are really important, and I think hydrogen is going to be a fuel of the future. But have you any idea what it is that kind of stops a bigger uptake? I was reading after I spoke to you about coming on the show. I was doing a little bit of reading on it, and I think it was Stagecoach as well that were involved in an experiment in Aberdeen where they ran hydrogen buses for a while, and at the end of the time that they were running them, they said it had been incredibly successful.
But then I
couldn't understand why they didn't carry on with it.
Well, in fact, there are some hydrogen buses running in London today. This is a new generation of hydrogen buses, but they have been running in London for a while, and they have been successful. That plant in Aberdeen is interesting. And it's much smaller scale than what we're going to get involved with in Herne Bay in London now. I believe that actually that project is still continuing. I don't know where the hydrogen's being used, whether it's cars or buses.
Right.
But fundamentally, the only thing now that is stopping hydrogen from succeeding in the bus market is the cost of building a hydrogen bus is about twice the cost of building a diesel bus. Now, of course, diesel buses are going to be phased out over the next decade because they are literally killing people.
And with
the particulates, as you said, and with the carbon challenge, they produce carbon as well. They're sort of two bad things associated with them. So diesel might be cheaper. The key thing is, though, can we scale up hydrogen industry and see the cost of these buses coming down and down and down? Because you remember with solar panels, 10 years ago, when they first started coming out in scale, they were expensive, and the government subsidised it. But as the industry got bigger, because people took them up, the factories produced them in greater numbers, and the cost of manufacturing came down and down and down, so that now the government's pretty much removed the subsidy for solar, and it's the same story for wind power. They've removed the subsidy, and it's competitive in the market with fossil fuels. Mm. So now, wind and solar, we can generate electricity pretty much subsidy-free. Question is, can hydrogen do that? Because if hydrogen can scale up and its production costs come down, maybe a hydrogen bus in 5-10 years' time will be built for the same cost as a diesel or indeed an electric bus. And that would be really the kind of holy grail of what we're trying to achieve here.
Yeah, absolutely. Funnily enough, somebody just sent me a link to a company called Wright Bus, which is a company owned by Bamford, in a joint venture with a hydrogen company, Rice Hydrogen.
And that's the same company.
Oh, is it? Okay, they're saying they have plans for 3,000 hydrogen buses in the UK.
Yeah, so that's exactly it. So Rice Bus is in Northern Ireland, so it's a UK business producing hydrogen buses. They are supplying buses to places like London. And Rise has got the same owners, and it's producing hydrogen. So they're sort of across the supply chain, and this could be a great British story. It won't just be Rise and Rise, but other companies we hope will join the supply chain. For instance, the electrolyzers that take that electricity and water and turn it into hydrogen, there's a company in Yorkshire that makes them in large scale. So we have some domestic manufacturing companies that can be part of this sort of industrial story and make this a success for Britain, as you say, creating jobs not just down here in East Kent but across the country.
Yeah, absolutely. I've had a tweet while we're talking from a lady called Lisa Cecil. She has copied you into the tweet, so you'll see it when you come off air. It says, hydrogen buses sound great. Will there be help with the cost? Well, that's what we were just talking about government investment and help with that. What's your view, read the big oil companies being able to sell products like diesel that they know are harmful to the environment? Not a leading question at all.
it is the question, and so I mean that's why the government is giving a subsidy essentially for hydrogen fuel to get the industry started.
Yeah.
I mean, the oil companies, you know, they're a mixed bunch of companies. You see people like BP and Shell are now making as big a play on their renewable energy generation as they are on the old school oil and gas production. So they bought electric charging companies, and they're getting big into renewable power.
Yeah.
So they're trying to change their ways, but they've always got this legacy business, which at the moment is still huge. Of the polluting oil, and so I think it's unrealistic to think they're going to just sell off all those oil assets overnight and truly put all of their investment into renewables. But I think we can see enough movement to feel hopeful for the future. Yeah, and the stock markets around the world are starting to turn away from fossil fuels.
Yeah.
And activist investors are starting to ask Exxon, BP and the likes of them, well, if we're going to hold your shares in the pension fund, we expect you to be X percent sustainable by this year. So the wheel is slowly kind of turning on that. And I'd like to see it go faster, Paul, but at least it's happening.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's slowly, isn't it? But that's like lots of things, you know. I remember back in the 80s having a piece of technology which was ridiculous. I had a mobile phone. It was an ETAC Motorola mobile phone. It cost me 3,000 quid, and there were about two people in the UK I could call on it. It was ridiculous. But of course, you know, fast forward 30 years, and the mobile phone, the smartphone, is ubiquitous across the world. Everyone, and I mean everyone, even in the poorest nations, everyone owns a mobile phone. or has access to a mobile phone. So it's as you were intimating earlier with hydrogen and hydrogen vehicles, they're expensive at the startup phase because it's new technology. But yes. As they roll out, the unit price goes down and down and down because there's more and more uptake. And that's where we are with new technology. Same with electric vehicles, isn't it? You know, electric vehicles in comparison to petrol vehicles are quite expensive. The advantage is the running cost. The running cost is lower, and some of that is because you don't have to fuel them in the same way that you do a petrol car. But also, of course, governments did help initially by having, you know, no taxation, no vehicle duties, and help to buy the vehicles and such like. So, you know, kickstarting all of that is really what's important, isn't it, to help get it off the ground? Because once it's off the ground, then the economies of scale are what kicks in and brings the price down overall.
Correct. And your governments haven't got endless money. And remember, it's our money as taxpayers.
Absolutely.
You know, they don't have endless money to fund an industry for 30 years. But it is realistic that they fund it for 5 or 10 years to get it to that place. And actually, you mentioned a Japanese car earlier, Toyota, but in Japan, they do use hydrogen for cars. In Britain, that hasn't caught on so far. I think the battle in Britain is going to be between hydrogen and electric for buses. And basically, the bigger the vehicle, the economics for hydrogen are better. Because if you took a double-decker bus, an electric battery for that is 2 tons. Imagine like just the energy that's lost transporting a 2-ton battery, whereas with hydrogen, it's a simple fuel cell, much, much lighter, much more efficient. So, you know, this, you know, that's the renewable energy industry to fight out, and you know, will cars in 20 years be electric or hydrogen or a mix? But I know, ditto for buses. You know, we talked about in Canterbury Council, should our waste collection vehicles, you know, the dustbin, dust vehicles, should they be hydrogen fuel? So this is all going to play out in the next decade or two.
Sure. No, absolutely. You know, just looking in from the outside, my money would, as long as the technology evolves and becomes mainstream, to me, hydrogen looks to be the future rather than electric vehicles for all kinds of reasons. But I guess we've already got a lot of electric vehicles in use now, so they're not going to go away anytime soon. So I think we'll see a mixed environment for many years now. Have you got any particular views on that?
Yeah, so your listeners know, the total cost of ownership for an electric car is slightly cheaper over its lifetime than for a petrol or diesel car, because the running costs are less. So already, actually, it is more cost-effective to get an electric car. We're just waiting for more electric charging points. But we've reached a landmark this year where there are now more electric charging points, not including houses, but just to the public, more electric charging points than there are petrol stations. So we're kind of getting ahead, and electric cars are taking off. I think my view is that there's so much money in the global automotive sector for electric cars. I think they'll find a way eventually round the problem of disposing of batteries, which you probably have heard, electric batteries at the moment, they don't have a great way of getting rid of them cleanly. They'll probably overcome that. But I think probably electric is going to be the likely winner for cars, for individual cars. But as I say, I think for buses, hydrogen's got a really strong case, and I suspect any for double-decker buses, we'll see most of those are hydrogen, and tankers and trucks.
I was going to strike me that electric trucks are not going to be a thing, despite what Tesla are doing. You know, it's okay with his little truck, but a big, you know, transporting Pantechnicon or, you know, articulated truck is never going to really get very far on electric power, is it?
Exactly, and that's great. And it's great that we've got these different solutions. We've got electric for light vehicles and hydrogen for heavy vehicles. The other thing that's worth saying, Paul, about hydrogen is it can also be used outside of transport. You can use it in your home boiler instead of gas. So it's used for heating. Mm-hmm. And although if you wanted to just use hydrogen, you need your own hydrogen boiler and replace your gas boiler, amazingly enough, you can blend in 20% hydrogen with 80% gas. And your existing boiler will run on that, which of course reduces your carbon emissions by 20%. So there are some trials going on around Britain, for instance, at Keele University in Staffordshire, where they're putting hydrogen into the existing gas grid and just checking that all the boilers and all the houses, offices, etc., are heating up okay, using that okay. So
Hydrogen
might be used in East Kent buses in the future, as we said. It might also be used in our homes and our offices 10 years out.
Yeah, absolutely. And the beauty of hydrogen is it's something you can manufacture reasonably easily.
Absolutely. It's just electricity through water. And, you know, in Kent, we're an incredibly sunny and windy county.
Yeah.
And so we have the renewable energy, solar and wind. And so we're well set up to produce hydrogen. In fact, Ryde have a provisional plan which would involve another hydrogen plant being built elsewhere in Kent.
All right,
so, we're at the forefront, and so it would be great if we can create a cluster of these plants and users of hydrogen in Kent, so that we become, you know, like the go-to place for the hydrogen industry to invest in other products that are needed to support this industry and create, you know, lots of jobs.
Fantastic. Yeah, absolutely. I just want to throw one last thing at you, Dan, while we're talking about this. Because it was something slightly in the same field, but I was a bit baffled by it, which is e-scooters.
Mm.
I don't know if you know much about it. Well, for some reason, apparently you can't buy e-scooters here, but they're talking about making them available to rent.
At the moment, they're not sort of licensed as such to be used across the whole country. So but the government announced the money recently. Actually, part of its response to COVID to help people do more, you can call it active travel if you like, but walking, cycling, and indeed e-scooting, rather than just driving, because of course they're discouraging people from using public transport to get to work. And so they're encouraging local authorities to allow e-scooters on the road. So I think this is something that's coming, but we're a bit behind the rest of the world.
Yeah, absolutely. But as you say, it looks like they're starting to take it seriously now and to start to look at allowing them out, which will be interesting.
It certainly will. And we'll need people to be responsible when they're using them.
Exactly. I mean, it's not an urban, it's not a rural kind of thing. It is an urban kind of thing. But it'd be interesting. And Canterbury would be a great place to try something like that, because it's a small enough place to get your hands around. But it is a city that's got an uptake with a large student population that would adapt to it, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's £500 an e-scooter, so a bit cheaper than an electric bike, say, which is another thing the government's now promoting and putting some money into.
Yeah.
I suppose some students have cars, don't they? And it's a lot cheaper than a car.
Yeah.
And you say for those short distances around the university and the streets of Canterbury, they would seem quite well placed. But we'll have to. It'll be a challenge for Kent County Council manage our highways to decide if they want to go for it, one of these trial areas, which are going to use some government money to trial e-scooters in our streets, to see how they would actually implement that in amongst all the other traffic that's on the road. So I think it's interesting, but someone with a much bigger brain than me needs to be looking at how they route that alongside bicycles, pedestrians and cars.
Yeah. Look, Dan, it's been fascinating talking to you. I know you've got a bit of a blog about these kind of things on a website. Do you want to give us a shout out for your website so people can read some of your thoughts on this?
Yeah, absolutely. I do put quite a lot of kind of environmental and local kind of information up on my website, which is quite easy. It's danwatkins.org.uk.
Fantastic. Look, Dan, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. We wish you much success with the plans to build the hydrogen manufacturing plant, and we look forward to seeing hydrogen buses on the streets of Kent in the very near future. In the meantime, have a great day, stay safe, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Yeah, thank you, Paul, and same to you and all of your listeners at this challenging time. Nice to talk about something positive, and have a great day.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. Dan Watkins there, of the chair of the Canterbury Climate Change Committee, talking about hydrogen vehicles in East Kent. Fantastic. We've had some more tweets come in. I've had a tweet from Luke at More Than Money. You can follow them on the Twitter, More Than Money UK. They provide free bite-sized information about how to insure yourself, your home and your business. You can call them as well on 01233 555 5454. That's Ashford, 01233 555 5454. More Than Money UK on the Twitter. Give them a follow. Construction Expo. Use your time to make money, more money from your business. Learn how to do more in less time. Focusing on what your on what will make your you money for your business. Oh, that's the Linda Garcia webinar that I talked about earlier. Bitesizeonline.co.uk. So do check that out. And Diamond Circle Weddings, did you see the photos from our latest style shoot at Broom Park Hotel? Broom Park Hotel's just outside Canterbury. We supplied the lighting, props and images. And NKade Images did the photography. If you want to look at that, it looks fantastic. The best thing to do is follow their Twitter handle, DC Weddings UK. Give DC Weddings UK a follow and you can see what they did to light up Broom Park Hotel. Now then, Bob Beattie has been sending me loads of links about hydrogen trucks and hydrogen vehicles. Well worth a follow, and then you can see all the links that he's been sending about that. You can follow Bob on Twitter. BobBT2417 is his Twitter handle. That's BobBT2417. Bob Beattie, give him a follow because he's got lots of links there about hydrogen vehicles, hydrogen trucks, fuel cells and all kinds of things. So if you're interested, have a look. And and he's also got some on hydrogen powered trains which are coming to Germany in 2021. So loads of interesting stuff. Give Bob a follow on the Twitter, and you can follow up on some of the things he's tweeted about and read some of the things that he's tweeted about. Fantastic. Thank you for that, Bob. Thank you for that, Dan. Really fascinating and interesting, and I look forward to seeing hydrogen vehicles go mainstream on our seats, on our streets. Now then, I caught up with Jules. She had a bit of a rant to start with, but then we talked sensible. Hey, so why don't we have a listen in a moment?
This is Channel 2.
Flexible training solutions for the glass, glazing and wider construction industries. fitfortrade.co.uk for occupational compliance and peace of mind.
Rift Accounting, your small business bodyguard. Riftaccounting.com.
The Networkers Networking Event, a full-day event helping business owners to understand how to network more effectively and efficiently. Three great speakers, eight of the best networking, masterminding and business support groups in Kent, and 50-plus great business owners to meet, network with and connect with. Join us at the Networkers Networking Event. It's an event not to be missed.
And I'm here with the lovely Paul Andrews for our weekly roundup of what's going on in the business world in the UK. Hello, good morning, lovely Paul.
Hello, you. How are you doing?
Hello, I'm all right. Well, I've had a bit of a kerfuffle, actually, quite a kerfuffle. May I rant for 5 minutes?
Oh, go on. It's, well, it's unlike you.
I know, well, usually the listener, you know, listens to you ranting. But as you know, my elderly mum, who's 89 and mows her own lawn, is a real trooper, saw a specialist at £250 a pop because the NHS would not refer her.
Right, okay. So a medical specialist, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, on her bronchiectasis, which gives her a permanent cough, which stops her sleeping. And if you, as you know, if you don't sleep, you're like a bear with a sore head.
Yeah.
And she hasn't slept for probably about 12 years. So I went to the GP and I said, she hasn't seen a specialist for 12 years. Please, will you refer her? I've done some research. This doctor is a specialist in bronchiectasis and I would like her to see him in wherever he was, somewhere in Kent. And she would not refer her on the National Health and wanted just to send her to a local guy. And I said, well, I have researched this man and he, you know, has done an awful amount of good for people with a similar sort of thing. Long story short, we ended up paying £250 a pop and saw him privately. it was like a miracle. You've seen the pictures. She looked amazing. She slept. He changed all her medication. And she's had three consultations with him at £250 a pop, and she's on a meagre pension. Mm. She no longer gets my dad's pension. And as she says, things are just going up. Food is going up. Electric, phone, everything is going up. So he asked for a scan, and I said, we've got to have it on the National Health. And that was in February. That hasn't happened because of COVID.
Yep.
I then said, sent an email saying that she started coughing again. We couldn't afford to see him anymore. She spent nearly a grand now. Mm. And could he just tweak her medication, perhaps by email, you know? And the PA wrote back and said, I'm really sorry, he can't see anybody because the NHS has taken over and all his work is on NHS patients. And I sent rather a cross email back saying, this is unfair. You know, she's 89, she's paid £1,000 nearly, and she needs your help. She's not sleeping. And she wrote back and told me the true story and just said, we are not allowed. And I've actually got quotes here, so I can't mention the doctor and I can't mention the PA. But she said, it's awful. She works for four consultants in the Kent area, and all of their scans, everything, all of the procedures, they are not allowed to do. They've signed contracts and they're not allowed to do. The NHS has stopped them. And as you know, the Nightingale hospitals aren't being used. And she said that their hospitals are empty, the private hospitals. Well, something is very wrong.
All the hospitals are empty.
Yeah, something is very wrong.
Everything's been stopped for COVID. Yeah. And the reason that we have a high excess death rate is because people are dying because they're not being treated.
Exactly. I'm very upset. Can I continue the rant? So then I started to think about it. She had a cataract operation last August, which went wrong locally on the NHS. And she said to me, I've been waiting for this film that's over her left eye to be sorted. And it's a very minor procedure in the local clinic in Whitstable. And I thought, I better chase this up. This has been going on for ages. So I phoned up Esther Review and I said, you know, where is it? She said, we've got nothing on our records for your mum needing anything. It will be down to the optician. She said she'd have gone to the optician after the thing and they would have said there's a film over her eye. So I said, but my mum is blind in one eye and she's on her own. And she hasn't had a letter or anything. So she said, oh, we're always having to chase up Boots optician in Canterbury at Whitefriars, mentioning names. We're always having to do it. They never send the follow-up forms in. So I've just called Boots and there's nobody there. And I got through to the main head office and he said, oh, well, you know, they see 20 patients a day and yeah, they often forget to send the form through. So my mum has been waiting since last August for a minor op, blind in one eye. Now it's not going to happen because all the clinics are closed and all the opticians are closed. I'm furious. I'm absolutely furious.
Yeah, as we just discussed, but the whole of the medical world has come to a grinding halt in order to try and deal with what they were told was going to be a massive, massive epidemic of COVID.
Yeah.
The good thing is the epidemic on the scale that was predicted didn't happen, and nowhere near the scale that was predicted didn't happen.
Because we all stayed home, possibly.
Yeah, but possibly, but whatever the reason for that is, it didn't happen, and that's a good thing that it didn't happen. The problem is nothing else has happened either. If you go to any of the local hospitals, to A&E now, they're empty.
Yeah.
There's no one in them, ever.
Yeah, exactly.
And you can't get appointments to do anything. You know, members of my family have all been trying to make appointments for different things this week, and nobody's been seen. That's got to change, and it's got to change rapidly. However, we're now sitting here waiting to see if there's going to be a massive second spike
in the
next couple of weeks, based on what everybody got up to over the last week or so.
People crowded, and the beaches. Did you see Bournemouth Beach?
Oh, no.
They were like ants all over.
The problem is people have now decided that they're not doing lockdown anymore and people are going out.
Or just out. They're going out.
Yeah, no, they're going out and they're going... I mean, luckily, the weather's changed today, so for the next couple of days, it's not going to be as warm as it was.
Yeah.
But people, you know, people have just... I mean, the stupid thing about this is right at the start of this, part of the government's message was they could only lock down for so long because the behavioural scientists said that people wouldn't tolerate it.
Yeah.
That's proved to be incredibly true. So why are they still locked down? You know, they knew that it wouldn't last and that people would, you know, start to just give up and go, do you know what, I'm going out. And that's exactly what's happened. People are going out. So we're going to have to wait and see if there is a second spike or not. As far as I can tell from other countries, there's not been a massive second spike anywhere. But it is really difficult to tell what's going on because
didn't South Korea get one in with the schools?
Yeah, but it's really difficult to tell because the statistics aren't consistent across anything.
Exactly.
You know, people compile in different ways at different times. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
So the you know, trying to compare statistics is pointless until it's all over. Anyway.
Well,
enough about ranting about that. I'm bored.
Should we talk about some good things?
Well, let's talk about anything, yeah.
Well, I will tell you a little tip. I had a filling that came out because I've been eating toffees. I never eat toffees, Paul Andrews. But in lockdown, I decided I could eat toffees. So I had some delivered. And I've been eating these amazing, they're caramel, salted caramel. And you know that combination is very clever, isn't it? What the food producers do, it's salt with fat. It's like a winning addictive, with a bit of sugar, of course, addictive. So I've been having a toffee a day, maybe two or three.
I was going to say, only one. Don't believe you.
And of course, I'm at the age where one shouldn't eat toffees. So my little fillings come out. And as you know, I used to be a dental nurse when I was 15, 16, up until about 20. I ended up in Harley Street, darling, and working for some amazing guys, mostly Australians and South Africans. That's where I learned my fabulous accent, you see. I can talk, you know, I can do South African, or I can do, how are you, Paul?
Wake me up when we get to the point of this story, will you?
Well, you can buy a kit from a pharmacy, a little plugging kit for your tooth.
Oh, teeth. I thought you were saying you were going to make your own toffees. Sorry, I lost the thread.
Oh, I would love to, if anybody wants to send me a recipe. So you can plug your own tooth with a little thing. But if you can't get to a pharmacy, if you happen to have a baby bell in your fridge, in your Frigidaire, hopefully a fridge that works for longer than, you know, 6 months, and we're going to talk about that later with the whole sustainable things. You can use the, not the cheese of the baby bell, eat that, but you can use the actual skin. Wax, the red round, and you can mould it and plug your tooth. So I shall be trying it later.
Cheesy teeth.
Yeah, I shall tell you all about it.
I look forward to that. Yeah. That's going to be lovely.
Yeah, but toffees anyway, and teeth, Paul.
Now we've got all your renting out of the way and we've only got 5 minutes left, can we talk about something that we were going to talk about?
Yeah, I've got some lovely, beautiful Cornish tea. Coconuts are quite nice, but Cornish tea is very nice. It's when I went to Mevagissey, I bought lots of Cornish tea.
Oh, they grow it in Cornwall, do they?
Well, apparently, the pirates, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, okay.
It's beautiful, it is. Yeah, it's right.
Well, beautiful. It'll be beautiful.
Yeah, with a cream tea.
Look, before we end, in about 2 minutes, I'd like to start, if we may.
All right, then.
I noticed you were talking on Twitter earlier.
Yeah, with Sonia Kimpton.
With Sonia, yeah. About your stand-up desk, and I thought that was a really interesting thing. As you know, I'm looking very heavily at the new work from home, remote work scenario that we're all going to be doing more of when lockdown is over.
Yeah.
So, and one of the things that's important in that is ergonomic furniture.
Yeah.
You know, especially if you don't have a lot of space in your home to have a home office. So tell me a little bit about your standing desk and how it works and how long you've had it and why you can't get another one and all the rest of it.
Okay, so because the new husband likes to stand and he works extremely long hours, he works 14, 15-hour days, as you would with a startup business. We've all started off our businesses. We know how much hard work it is. So I decided it was bad for him sitting on his derriere all the time. So I went to a company called backpainhelp.com and I purchased, and I've put it out on my Twitter, but I will do it again. I purchased a lovely standing desk, which is in the background, Paul, you'll see it. And he loves it. And you can actually, when I use his desk, I can fold it down because I don't like standing for too long, but he'll stand all day.
Can you sit at it?
You can actually fold it down. I'll do a little video of it later. And so it just springs down, then you drag it up and it's at eye level height, fabulous. And it has a little thing that keeps it so you don't flop it down by accident. So it's been brilliant. It's got a little shelf underneath for all your goodies, your toffees and teas and things. And then on that same website, I got a little portable one for Shay when he was at uni, because he was doing a lot of studying on desks and I was horrified. And he was sending me pictures of himself. So I got a little white portable one that you can have on a dining table, very cheap, 25 quid, I think it was. Right. So we've had those for about probably 8 years. Maybe 7 years. And Tracy Miles, who is coming on the Business Bunker show to talk about posture and working from home, she's really hot on people working from beds and hunched over. I sent her the link for this backpainhelp.com and she was very impressed. I think she talked to them.
They're coming on the show on the 16th of June.
Yeah. Brilliant. Then with Apos, the lovely Rima, talking about the shoes that I wear. So also, I had one commission because Gav works downstairs. We have an upside down house, so the office top. In the living room, he likes to look out at the view, see the odd Chinook helicopter going by or someone, you know, in trouble in the sea. So I had a local craftsman called Barry Feldman create this. I gave him the design of what I wanted, and it's beautiful because it comes up to a standing desk and then it folds down to a coffee table. So it's a brilliant idea.
Wow. Okay.
If you've only got an open plan house and you don't have an office, again, a lovely, lovely idea. And I wish I'd put it on wheels because it's, you know, you drag it about when you hoover.
You can move it about, yeah.
Yeah, so next I would get it on wheels. So if anybody wants those details.
That's going to be really important for people working at home with small spaces. You've got to have furniture that works for you in different ways, but is ergonomically satisfactory as well.
Yeah.
Because our posture, I mean, my posture sitting in front of this computer all day is appalling.
Yeah. At the beginning, I was getting neck ache and stuff because I
get massive tension headaches due to, you know, my neck and back sitting in a bad way. So it's massively important that if we're going to work from home more and more and more, that we have furniture that is ergonomically satisfactory, but it also needs to fit in with our lifestyle, doesn't it?
For
when we're not working at weekends, and you know, because most people don't have oodles of spare space to have a permanent office in their house.
Yeah.
So you know, it's about finding a good corner somewhere, or double utilizing a small room somewhere, like a box bedroom or something.
Something you can even tuck away would be good, wouldn't it?
With
a cupboard.
Yeah.
And that's something we're looking at. We're going to do one in our garden because we fight over the one office we have.
Right.
So that's great. Yeah, backpainhelp.com. And if listeners have any ideas on that sort of thing, please tweet us at Vanilla Web or at Jules Serkin. And we would love to mention companies. Tell me about your make, do and mend sort of reusable idea.
I was just thinking more about this. I watched on TV the other day The Repair Shop. I don't know if you've ever seen
it. I haven't.
I think it's great. It's one of those things, you know, I'm as bad as everyone else at this. I have things that break, and you look at the cost of repairing them, and it's cheaper to buy something new.
Yeah, it's a shame.
And I just think, what a waste all this is. I was having a conversation with someone the other day as well, and saying, we were just talking about globalized products and this incessant desire to replace everything with a new version every few months. Yeah, especially mobile phones and things like that.
Oh yeah.
You don't need that. Yeah. What the companies that do that have more money than most countries in Western Europe.
Yeah.
They don't need to make any more profit. Why do they keep producing new versions of everything?
Well, the trouble is they always bring out that extra camera bit, don't they, or something. And, you know, we so many of us use that camera for our work.
But it's not entirely necessary, is it? I mean,
neither are olives, but I've got some coming tomorrow.
Look, sat at my desk here. I'm holding up, listener, because you can't see it. I have three iPhones.
Yeah.
I've got a 6 Plus, a 7 Plus, and an 11
Your
Pro.
Three iPhones, Andrews, you are.
Yeah, but the stupid thing is, you don't really need, you know, one of these, the oldest one, will do all the things that the other two do. What, you know, we're suckers for keep buying new technology, and we don't repair enough of the old stuff that we've got, and we don't utilize enough of the old stuff, you know. And it's something that I think from a renewables point of view and from a societal point of view, we have to start to use things more effectively and not keep throwing everything away and buying state-of-the-art stuff every 6 months. You know, I don't mind you bringing out something new every couple of years.
Yeah, yeah.
But, it, you know, it's every
September.
Months.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Before Christmas.
Yeah.
I agree. And I will send the listener some details. There's a make, do and mend sort of market in Whitstable in the Oxford Street, which is the high street there. They call it Oxford Street. And I'll get details. Please remind me on that, Paul. And because that's really good. There, people are bringing in things and they've got people that will make do and mend.
Yeah, that's good.
And that's why when my washing machine went wrong, I called Steve Marley from Advance, who I think I mentioned a few shows back.
Yep.
He's local, he's independent. I don't go to Comet. I buy everything from him. He's fitted my cookers, everything, you know.
Yeah.
And he came round, sorted my washing machine out and didn't even give me a bill because he's lovely. You know, amazing. And he came round. Yeah. I called him on sitting on the beach and he came the next morning at 9 o'clock.
Yeah. And we want to see more of that. We want to see people rewarding local tradespeople and local service people by giving them more of their business. You're absolutely
exactly.
Right.
And don't get what I've realized is don't get hooked into the insurance for 5 years, because then you can't just buy from your local, you've got to buy from them. And it really hoodwinked me, that whole insurance for a washing machine and dishwashers and things.
Cool.
And very hard to get an English washing machine.
Yeah.
Can't get one.
Mine speaks French. What does yours speak?
Well, I've
I guess
got
it's French. I don't know.
I've got a Blomberg fridge from Steve, which is German. So, because I didn't want anything from far parts.
Acton, I'm ready.
Yeah.
Actually, Germany, Italy, and the USA are the three places that make all the washing machines.
Oh, are they? What about China?
No,
I forgot about hats. We got so ranty.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's a stunning one, isn't it?
We've got one hat this time. Hold on. Yeah.
Well, no, I forgot. I've got a whole pile. But we got very animated, didn't we? I was close to tears.
Hold on. Where did the we come into that? I didn't get a word in edgeways.
Should we have an hour lockdown chat?
Something like that.
Yeah.
Look up. I can't see you under that hat.
Well, then it looks like I look like a rice paddy then, you see. It's a different time. But if you peer down...
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly why I've got you to do it.
Who might our sponsor be?
It's Colin Bat Removals. And we've had a long chat with him earlier in the show. So do check them out, Colin Bat Removals.
I saw on Rightmove that the market is moving. And did you see what it said? I did tweet it out. People are looking to buy in villages and towns because they realise now after lockdown they can work, many people can work not in a big city. They don't need to be.
Without commuting. Yep, absolutely.
Without commuting. So, that's great. May I mention my son, Softcat, if you Google them, larger size companies, but he will implement loads of stuff like that for home working. From me and from the lovely Paul Andrews, how time flies. Tune in next week for more ranting from Paul and Jules.
Have a good week.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
That was the renting news brought to you by Jules Serkin. Okay, we're almost at the end of the show, and I've got a few things that I just want to tell you about before we go off air. Some of you may remember that there was an apprentice graduation ceremony that was held in Rochester Cathedral last year. There was an intention to hold one again this year. Obviously, the coronavirus epidemic has put the kibosh on that, but they have now announced there will be celebrated an apprenticeship graduation ceremony that will be done virtually. And the organising team behind the first Kent and Medway Apprentice Graduation Ceremony held last October has confirmed that a celebration will take place on the 2nd of October, but in a new format. Wire Belt Chairman and Project Team Member Paul Winter says due to COVID-19, we, like so many other people, have had to take a look at future plans and events. Last year, we were lucky enough to congratulate 100 apprentices in Rochester Cathedral, together with their employers, friends and family, but this no longer seems viable. We're determined to continue to show our support of apprenticeships so that we're pleased to say we will adapt and hold a virtual celebration on Friday the 2nd of October. Plans are underway to develop an online event showing the benefits of apprenticeships. Apprentices are invited to take part on the day, be personally recognised and receive a certificate of completion. The event will include keynote speakers and a wide coverage on social media, enabling firms, apprentices and supporters from across the county to take part online. Any apprentice who has successfully completed their qualification at any level or discipline between the 1st of September 2019 and the 31st of August 2020 and is a Kent or Medway based or has a Kent or Medway based provider can be nominated. So if you want to find out more, if you want to nominate an apprentice or you want to self-nominate, if you drop an email to alison.parmar, P-A-R-M-A-R, alison.parmar@fsb.org.uk. And that kind of brings us to the end of another Business Bunker show. We'll be back with another show next week. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for your tweets. Thank you for your emails. And thank you to our two fantastic guests, Mr. Andrew Urquhart from Colin Bat Removals and Dan Watkins, the chair of the Climate Change Committee in Canterbury. We'll be back with another show next week. Stay safe, everybody. See you soon.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.